This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao. Construction of the 600-mile Atlantic Coast Pipeline stalled 2 years ago. But earlier this month, the U.S. Supreme Court removed a hurdle in its path. The court upheld a permit from the U.S. Forest Service that allows the pipeline developers to build under the Appalachian Trail. The proposed pipeline's path travels through West Virginia, Virginia, and 8 North Carolina counties. Lindsay Gilpin is the founder and editor-in-chief of Southerly. She's reported on the pipeline and the affected communities for the online news outlet Grist. Lindsay, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So tell us more about the Supreme Court case. At question was whether or not the Forest Service had authority to grant right-of-way to this particular piece of land traversed by the Appalachian Trail. What did they rule?
Yeah, so by a 7-2 margin, the court reversed a lower court's decision that, as you said, upheld a permit and upheld a permit granted by the Forest Service so that Atlantic Coast developers could tunnel under a 0.1-mile section of the AT in Virginia. And they say that the digging would be 600 feet underground and it wouldn't affect a lot of the surrounding area. But of course, opponents were concerned about the impact that would have on the environment, on the views, on tourism in the area. So this was a ruling that everyone had been waiting on for a really long time. The really interesting thing, though, is that it was really more about management of the AT on Forest Service land. So it's a very technical case. And a lot of the opinion looks at really who has control over what the what Chief Justice John Roberts said. The right-of-way was between two agencies and grants only an easement across the land, not jurisdiction over the land itself. So they're basically saying that the National Park Service might be managing the Appalachian Trail, but it's land on Forest Service land, so they don't have the right to reject that permit.
So it gets very technical, but ultimately the significance is that Dominion Energy does not have to reroute this section of the pipeline. They don't have to redraw because they can't go through this piece of land. Is that right?
Well, actually, the another really fascinating part of this is Dominion only contested one piece of this particular permit. This is a permit that stopped construction at the end of 2018, and the reason that most of the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is not anywhere near built yet. So basically, they contested this piece of the permit, but the Forest Service still has to look to get another permit and look at other routes. So Dominion will still have to see if they can avoid crossing the AT, is what Southern Environmental Law Center lawyers have said. So it's really, they still have a long way to go, even with this permit, not counting the many other permits that the Dominion and Duke need to get.
Well, the story gets so confusing because there are so many permits. And as we said earlier on, as of right now, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline is only 10% built and construction has not been going on since 2018. So tell me about some of these other roadblocks and what it may take for the construction to begin again.
Yeah. So the ACP was granted approval by FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, in 2017. And, opponents have been fighting this for 6 years now in general to stop it from being built. And it's run into a lot of issues because of the route. The route traverses steep, steep Appalachian mountain slopes. It goes through Native American communities. It goes through historic black communities. So there's been a lot of lawsuits against it over eminent domain to prevent from taking people's land. And most notably, the Dominion still requires 8 permits for the 600-mile route. So a couple of notable ones are an air pollution permit from Virginia regulators for a really controversial compressor station in Union Hill in Buckingham County, Virginia. This is a historic black community settled by freed slaves after the Civil War. So the judge cited environmental justice concerns in their ruling, and so they still need to get that permit. There's a couple other ones that are of note, like a new biological opinion from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, because they said that that developers didn't take endangered species into consideration enough when the original environmental impact statement was made. They also have to get approval to cross the scenic Blue Ridge Parkway still as well. So there's a lot, and now the Southern Environmental Law Center and a lot of organizations are trying to get the environmental impact statement redone or at least supplemented because it's been so long since it was done. And they want, some of these erosion issues that might have happened over the last couple of years, and also taking climate change into effect, consideration when we're talking about what might happen with this region of the country as, you know, as the climate does change.
So one thing that's interesting, as you mentioned, I mean, environmentalists have taken a very different strategy with the Atlantic Coast Pipeline than some of the opposition to other projects. They've really focused on the substance of the permits. So talk about this strategy and the effect that that's had on the building process.
Yeah, it is really, it's really fascinating because, you know, the ACP is so different from other pipeline projects because generally FERC has historically approved most pipeline projects that have come across its desk. And unlike most of those, the Atlantic Coast Pipeline hasn't been built while, like, everyone is fighting the project. Usually what happens is people are, like, suing and trying to get it stopped, but developers are still building these projects. Like, the Mountain Valley Pipeline, for instance, is mostly built, is, like, over 90% built. So, and you know, the ACP has a lot of similar concerns, right, where it's environmental justice concerns because, as I said, it is going through communities of color. And then, but it also, you know, they just, the opponents and lawyers found a lot of problems with the, because it was fast-tracked, and it, because it's so huge, it's 600 miles, and there's just a lot of permits that they had to get, and a lot of, they cross hundreds of waterways, and there's just a lot of, I think, substance, like you're saying, that to be able to contest in all of these permits, especially because it seems like the review was passed so quickly and not really looked at as thoroughly as it could have been.
You mentioned the Mountain Valley Pipeline. You said it's over 90% built, but there has been a recent approval of an extension that would go into North Carolina. Tell me about this and how the recent Supreme Court ruling may play a part in this extension.
Yeah, so the Mountain Valley Pipeline is 300 miles long. It's about half as long as ACP, but it travels a similar route through Appalachia. And yeah, the MVP Southgate project was recently approved by FERC, and that would take an extension, as you said, into North Carolina, I think like 75 miles into North Carolina. And one of the things that folks are worried about with this Supreme Court ruling, like while it doesn't give an ultimate decision on the ACP, it sets a precedent for kind of protecting public lands in general in regards to Forest Service land and National Park Service management. And people are worried that because attorneys for the MVP say that this is a missing link for their project, which is almost complete, is crossing the trail at a separate location in Virginia, some folks are worried that they could have an easier time doing that crossing now that this Supreme Court decision has been made.
Hmm. And there is a particular part of Northampton County in North Carolina where a natural gas compressor station would be built. Can you talk a bit about that and how that plays into this big conversation?
Yeah. Northampton County was, I visited several times in my reporting, and we ran a video piece on the community in Garysburg and surrounding areas. It was a predominantly Black community, very rural, and this compressor station, very similar to the one, or, you know, the same as the one I'm saying is going to be built in, or is slated to be built in Union Hill in Virginia. It's, you know, it's a Black community, and folks feel like they didn't have much of a say in where it was going. It's back in a forest, and they worry about it exploding or leaks or noises that could cause, you know, stress for the ecosystem and for people. So I went there several times and spoke to a lot of folks there, and it's interesting because the Virginia case has gotten so much attention over the environmental justice concerns, but what's happening in Northampton County is exactly the same thing. Or very similar. And so now it feels like the some folks I've talked to there are organizing more to really try to see if they can use some of the same arguments and evidence against like air permits and things like that for the compressor station that's, you know, somewhat built but has halted too in Northampton County. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing that's flown under the radar, and the groups all along the pipeline route, as you know, the 6 years has dragged on, are communicating more, organizing together more, trying to kind of build a bigger effort, I think, to draw attention to the risks that the pipeline poses in their communities.
Yeah, and just to clarify, the Northampton County is for the Atlantic Coast Pipeline project.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this raises interesting conversations about the need for these pipelines. I mean, obviously, in this moment, you know, our need for natural gas has gone down. People aren't driving. You know, there have been just a lot of interesting questions raised about what is energy consumption and what is the future of it going to look like. But even before that, there were some questions about whether or not we needed these pipelines in these locations. Could you tell me briefly about that and how that factors into where these are in the building process?
Yeah. So, you know, the U.S. is in the midst of, or at least up until the pandemic hit, has been in the midst of this natural gas boom. And that has led to a lot of pipelines being constructed in Appalachia to take gas from the Marcellus Shale region in West Virginia and also, of course, like along the Gulf Coast where oil and gas industry is. And, you know, the challenge is that while this boom is going on, a lot of states, Virginia, North Carolina, and others are moving to decarbonize their economies, to install more renewable energy, solar and wind, and really move towards addressing climate change. You know, not all of the states, but there is a lot of movement being made in the last couple of years. So a lot of the concern is that this plan by Dominion, and that has been approved in North Carolina by Governor Cooper, like that doesn't go along with a lot of the goals of trying to address climate change because of the methane emissions and other impacts that the natural gas pipelines would have.
I only have about 20 seconds left, but will you just tell me briefly about the cost and the cost increase and how that fits into the energy conversation?
Yeah. So Dominion's guaranteed a 14% return on this project, which means, and because they are the builders of the pipeline and the purchasers of the gas, that means that they could charge their ratepayers for the project, which has increased from $4.5 billion-ish to $8 billion now.
All right. Lots more to follow. We'll have to have you back to talk more about it. My guest is Lindsay Gilpin, founder and editor-in-chief of Southerly. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. Have a good one.